Coming to you by way of the not-for-profit Mainframe Studios at 900 Keough Way in downtown Des Moines, this is 900 Views, a podcast about building community through the arts as we build an arts community, and now we're building it virtually. I'm your host, Pat Bodie. I'm coming to you this week from my Urbandale dining room. My collaborator, Alex Cooney, is on the line recording with his four children from his home. And with us from someplace else, she'll have to tell us where, is Mainframe's executive director and COVID-19 survivor, I do not use that phrase lightly, Siobhan Spain. We're going to talk two times for this week and next week because there's a lot to cover. And Siobhan, let's start with the concept of your family being one of the early families in Iowa to face this virus head on. Tell us a little bit about that experience and, you know, kind of how it's impacting your daily life today.
Yes, of course. I'm happy to share. It seems like, you know, given that we were one of the earliest to get tested positive, it's been helpful to talk about it openly because oftentimes we're the only one people know that have actually been tested and coming out positive and being able to be in recovery and just sharing our experience has proven to be really helpful to people, which we're happy to do. And we're so lucky to have the story that we do. So we, my husband, Jonathan DeLima, he oversees the arts collection with Come and Go, and he also acts with Iowa Stage Company. He is a very careful person, and he was not feeling well for quite a while. And we were at the dinner table one day, and I said, you know, you should really see if you can get tested because you're worrying. And I know, like a lot of people who have talked to me since this news came out, is that one thing that people really worry about is whether they have it or not. And it's very stressful. So Jonathan was experiencing the same thing. And I think the stars were aligned to the fact that he was able to get tested when he did. So that was, I think, the 18th of March. And sure enough, it came back positive the next day. And he was self-isolating anyway. As soon as he did not feel well, he stayed home from work. We really do not know how he got it. And I think that's an important aspect to consider. Even though he was in contact with people that were traveling from out of the country and out of state, which is partly why he was able to get the test in the first place. Mm-hmm. None of those people were sick, though. So I think it really shows that you can either be asymptomatic or get it from sources that you really are unaware of. And again, my husband's just one of those super careful people, and he self-isolated in our basement, like guest room right away. And I was putting food for him on the step and knocking on the door, and we'd FaceTime from within the house to be able to have contact with him. And it was unnerving.
And still you got the disease.
And still, oh yes, it's so contagious. And I think the fact that we do share a household, no matter what they said, we just have to assume that you and your daughter, 8-year-old daughter Frances, has it as well. But we want to know if you come down with symptoms. And so sure enough, a few days later, I all of a sudden just felt terrible. And I just couldn't. I was so tired. I had chills. I could not warm up. And so they brought me in to get tested as well. And a couple days later, I was tested positive. So they didn't test Frances. They assumed that she had it. She was asymptomatic and that she would just ride it through with us. So it's really great to be able to say we're on the other side of it.
And I interrupted you. You talked about it being unnerving. Tell me more about that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, this virus affects people in different ways. So, like, a few things to note is that I think some very common aspects are the fatigue level, the chills, the body aches, the fever, and then sometimes it comes with a cough or not. Jonathan definitely had a cough. He also, in some people, they're also finding, even though you can breathe just fine through your nose, your sense of smell disappears. And that's what he experienced. Another aspect is you think you're getting over it and then it will come back with a vengeance. So like he was sick for over 2 weeks and there was a time where he's like, oh, I'm feeling better. And then the next day he was so discouraged because he wasn't. And mm-hmm. he'll just be back to square one. And then he'll be sleeping for 3 hours and I can't get a hold of him, you know, via Facebook or, you know, FaceTime or anything. And it's just so worrisome not to be able to be there right with the person. It's a very isolating virus no matter what. But then once you have it, you have to just quarantine, you know, as severely as you can. And it's very, it's a solo thing. And it's very unnerving for family members.
So it's, even though those of us who are kind of on this lockdown feel as though we're isolated, it doesn't really compare to having to isolated in your own home from your loved ones who have the disease.
No, I think it's very different. People think that, man, I'm self-isolating. I'm like, no. You're so lucky to be able to function the way you are because and just think of the people, luckily we didn't have to be hospitalized either. And I think we were self-isolating in the home, like absolutely not even stepping out our front door, really being careful of what we were touching and everything. And then actually when I got tested positive, it was a really weird celebration in our house because even though it was positive, we were able to sit at the table together again. And my daughter was just, you could tell she was so happy just to have us back again. And I hugged my husband for the first time in a week. And it was just, it was very emotional.
Yeah, I can't imagine. But we're so, so grateful that you're in recovery. And I do know because I was there when you made the decision, early on compared to so many others, to cancel the first Friday for Mainframe in April.
Yes.
So I know how aware you were prior to getting ill. Does having experienced that illness bring this in a way to Mainframe in an even more powerful way in terms of trying to think through how Mainframe can and should function in this era?
Yeah, most definitely. I think I got a reality check between being ill and reading the news constantly. Just how uncertain our future is, and that, you know, at first it was funny to think that we just thought, oh well, we'll say we're canceling April, but of course, like, a day later, I said, it's just until further notice. I mean, it's just very clear that we don't know when we'll be able to spend time in groups again. And also, you know, we've been leaving Mainframe opening and functioning for our artists and Tangerine Food Company that's running a catering business, a pickup delivery business out of there for our artists to function, but it's not officially open to the public, of course, and we don't have any events happening within the building. So we're very conscious of letting artists know that, and people who visit the building, that you have to be very careful for whatever, you know, just out in regular business, you know, however you're ever conducting yourself. The same goes for Mainframe, but it still has to be a safe place for artists to be able to go in and use their studios and be able to exist as their, in some sort of normal day-to-day activity, but also for those who rely on their art for a living to be able to either continue their work or rethink the way they do the work or make it available and obviously respond to more and more the resources that are becoming available to them. That's almost a full-time job as in and of itself.
Yeah, so let's talk about a couple of things here. Those resources that we're learning are available so that others who are still trying to figure this out can at least hear some of the right acronyms. And at the same time, you're back in many ways in that you've already started to poll, if you will, or survey your residents at Mainframe, your studio folks at Mainframe, and understand better where they're coming from. So let's touch a little bit on what's happening with the artists at Mainframe, how they're managing in these times, and then let's touch on those resources that we know are available, including one you have kind of to announce.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say that everybody's impacted. And, you know, most of our artists are small businesses and rely on people and exposure and events. And our First Fridays drew a big poll of people, and it was very active and lively. And some of the artists definitely paid their rent and made a living off those First Fridays alone. Now, others didn't. We have such a range of artists within the building, but it's very important for them. And so I think it's safe to say every single one of them is impacted in various degrees. They are a lot of sole proprietorships. It's difficult to apply for unemployment. There's really gaps. They're trying to fill the gaps through a lot of the resources that are becoming available. But, you know, and then some are changing the way they're doing things. Like our artist, Gretchen Bowling, who is the clothing designer.
Sustainable fashion.
Yes, sustainable fashion. She did a sample sale of her work online. And then also she has been making a ton of masks for the healthcare industry in partnership with DMAC, Des Moines Area Community College Fashion Institute. And then also with DART, which is, you know, the transportation system in Des Moines, and even Sue Penn, who is another artist in Mainframe Studios. She designs fabric for major manufacturers, and she's donating fabric to that effort. So it's interesting to see how, as I suspected, artists are able to be very responsive and understand the needs of the community and do what they can to step up because they're resourceful, they're creative, they know how to make things happen. And so it's been really heartening to witness how people are responding.
So what kind of support can these artists start to hopefully see? I believe you and I both participated in a webinar that the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs hosted just a couple of hours ago. And thanks to the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs for doing that. There's a number of programs out there. What were you hearing in that webinar that you thought might be most relevant to some of the artists with whom you're familiar and with whom you work?
Well, I think there's so many. I took away the fact that there are a lot of avenues. And I feel for people having to respond to it all because it does take time to do the paperwork and the surveys. I think anytime an artist or anybody can respond to surveys that they receive, it's a way of our nation and organizations that want to support can really gauge the need, and it gives them a reason to advocate for getting more funding for these people. So first and foremost, I think surveys are really important right now that people respond to them.
Yeah, that's a good message because that came through loud and clear at the webinar. About 209 for-profit organizations had responded, but only about 60 actual artists, individual artists.
Yes. And that was for the Americans for the Arts response. So Americans for the Arts is a great resource on a national level, but they really have been advocates for individual artists and nonprofits and very engaging organization. So if you see a survey from the Americans for the Arts and you can look it up, please respond because they are so active in the national arts community. So we've responded to a few as a nonprofit. So even Mainframe, you know, artists are worried about paying rent. We have not completed our project. We do not have the financially self-sustaining business plan yet in place. We do not have reserves to be able to give them breaks in rents. We're trying to figure out if we can defer rents based on if they get these loans and grants. So we as an organization are filling out these surveys as well, because we're also one of the in the mix that will is definitely impacted. But Iowa Workforce Development, they have a paycheck, you know, they have so many acronyms, I'm trying to remember them all.
Well, the pandemic unemployment assistance, or PUA.
Yes.
And then the federal pandemic unemployment compensation, that's the $600 in unemployment. But for those who are more like in the self-employed, freelance, gig economy type category, it looks like that pandemic unemployment assistance might be one of the places to start. There's also economic injury disaster loans.
Mm-hmm.
And these things kind of seem to have some overlapping elements to them.
They do. And I'm, you know, what I'm so grateful is that they're very aware that independent contractors, sole proprietors, freelancers, people that rely on the gig economy are important aspects in the mix. So, and they don't necessarily fall into the regular categories of unemployment and payroll and all this stuff, because they go about business a different way. So I love the fact that I saw so many of these programs alter the way they normally do things in order to include these community members that are so vital to our economy. So like artists and freelancers and entrepreneurs.
So one of the pieces of counsel, I think, is right now that if you have applied for some of these things, or you were going to and they didn't seem to be a fit, don't rule it out for the future, because
absolutely
the guidance
not.
Is constantly changing and they're aiming for those things.
I did hear even with the Iowa Workforce Development, ones that were denied before in the pandemic unemployment assistance is being kept in the pool, because as new funding becomes available, they'll open it back up. And so those people will be able to get a letter saying that they don't have to reapply, but they're still being considered for this relief. So that's good too. I think there's the CARES Act. The Federal CARES Act is definitely the most broad reaching. Iowa Workforce Development. There's a National Artist Relief Fund through the Americans for the Arts. Iowa Arts Council is also going to have a relief fund. And National Endowment of the Arts just got some funding too. So a lot of information in the works right now. And so people should be encouraged. I know it's hard because it's so uncertain, and people need, some people obviously need funding ASAP. But it's nice to know that there are things in the works, and that we should be encouraged to stay informed and go back to these resources and check on updates.
And just to reinforce what you were saying, some of those pieces you just mentioned, they were kind of hot off the presses. Chris Kramer, yeah, the director of the Department of Cultural Affairs, opened with some of that NEA money that they were just now starting to understand was potentially coming their way,
right,
and that they would be able to hopefully figure that out soon. But they had just gotten that information themselves.
Oh, they are. And American Arts just circulated their relief fund, because they did that survey to start. And during that webinar, I had several emails about their artist relief fund, and artists can get up to $5,000 for a grant, and they'll have different funding times. So it's not just a one-time deal. You know, if an artist needs funding now, they can apply, but maybe some artists will run out of money further on and they can apply to a later time frame for this. But it seems pretty straightforward and easy to apply. So I definitely encourage people to look for that too.
Well, now before we go, you've got a bit of an announcement to make related to Mainframe in particular and a GoFundMe approach.
Mm-hmm. So we started our own artist relief fund through GoFundMe. It's called the Mainframe Artist Relief Fund. And we'll be promoting it on our website and in our social media realms, about a $10,000 goal that we have to just help artists apply within the building to be able to pay the rent, utilities, and other expenses, anywhere from like $100 to $1,500, to be able to make sure that they have a future to look forward to and that they can continue the work that they're doing. I just see artists impacted so much, and it's so hard not to feel like there's just so much I want to do. And so promoting the Mainframe Artist Relief Fund is one aspect. Another one is just buying art, remembering that these artists are here and people still have birthdays, people still have Mother's Day to look forward to. And if they could figure out how to reach out to these artists and make those connections, just makes a huge difference.
Well, Siobhan, I can't thank you enough. We're going to wrap up part one of this interview with Siobhan Spain, because what we really have yet to get to in any meaningful way is some of the different work that's happening around this kind of virtual community building and the marketing and business aspects, audience role in this virtual world. Some of those different challenges and opportunities that are ahead are going to be kind of part two of this time we have with Siobhan Spain. So normally this is the point where I remind people to go to the First Friday event. Instead, I'm going to remind you to go to Mainframe's website and click on the GoFundMe option. It's a very, very simple thing to donate. It's kind of a one-click deal, pretty much. As a reminder, that website address is mainframestudios.org. So please take some time and do that, and join us next week for part two with Siobhan Spain, Executive Director of Mainframe Studios, as we look at COVID-19 and how to navigate this virtual arts world. I'm Pat Bodie. A shout out to Alex Cooney, and thanks for joining us for this 900 Views podcast.